Hello, travelers! Gather round for a new episode of Venture Maidens. Before we dive in, you know I gotta say it, if you are enjoying the show, please make sure to open up that podcast app and leave us a rating and review. We don't pay to advertise the show, so the best way to show your support is to post your recommendations so others are encouraged to check us out. I also want to officially share that we have started planning for PAX Unplugged 2023. All of the maidens will be in attendance at PAX Unplugged this year, which is a rad tabletop gaming convention that happens annually in Philadelphia. This year, 2023, the con is happening December 1st through 3rd. Since we're all going to be there, we'd love to see you if you're also attending. We'll keep you posted with official meetup and event details as soon as we lock them in. I also want to say thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our theme song, and to Tabletop Audio for providing additional background music. And thank you, of course, to our gorgeous, wonderful, and incredible sexy patrons who keep our lights on with their Patreon donations. We wouldn't be here without you, you big damn heroes. Alright, that's the business, so I'm going to hit you with a recap of what happened last time, and then we'll dive into the action. Last time on Venture Maidens. Our heroes used an animal messenger spell to send Reynard, an infamous fey deal broker, a request for an audience. They were rewarded with an invitation to the animal lord's secret abode, and upon arrival, found their host in the midst of a fey dinner party. Introductions were made before the group sat down to hammer out the terms of trading away Tony's big favor. A deal was struck, and our heroes were saddled with several minor favors and one big time-sensitive task: to retrieve a rose from a mythic locale called the Hanging Gardens of Tethys. The gang returned to the chicken hut to prepare for the journey, and Lou was trapped in a dream created by Jada, who refused to let Lou participate in the impending mission to save her from Hecate's wrath. And that's what happened. Now, here's the show.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Tony now strikes out on her own, determined to fix things alone. But dangers haunt this swath of sky, ancient ghosts that refuse to die. Look to the horizon as we head into Favor, episode 39, Castle in the Sky.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. It's another episode of Venture Maidens, episode 39. Ugh, I'm very excited. How y'all feeling tonight?
A lot of nervous energy. Nervous, excited energy. Mother is not here.
Yeah, mom is gone. As you can all see, if you're watching, or you will hear if you're listening, Katie is unable to join us today, so Lou is away. The kids can play. And we've inherited a big old mess, so it'll be good to see that. But yeah. Hey, everybody. We're the Venture Maidens, in case you didn't know. We're in D&D Actual Play 5th Edition stream that converts to a podcast. Before we dive in, I do want to say that this is a very adult-themed stream, so you can expect some adult stuff. So if you're a little baby, you shouldn't be watching this show. In general, we keep a content warning up just for body horror, just because of graphic fantasy violence descriptions. I don't anticipate any other content warnings eligible for this episode, but you never know. So if you are watching, make sure to check in chat those content warnings or in the episode show notes. I also want to say that Venture Maidens is unofficial fan content permitted under the fan content policy, not approved or endorsed by Wizards of the Coast. Portions of the material used are property of Wizards of the Coast. Just wanted to get that out of the way. But yeah, I think that's the business. We're just like, let's kick this off. Okay. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're doing it.
I'm so excited. There's going to be so much happening. We're doing heroic destiny stuff. It's going to be great. So, hey, everybody. My name is Celeste Conowich, and tonight I will be your dungeon master.
Hello, I'm Nassim Atamad. I'm playing your half-orc fighter, Fitonia Silvertail.
And I'm Sage, and I'm going to be your beckoning bard, Aoife Flannery, and a little something else that we'll find out later.
A little thing we'll see. We'll see in a bit. But yeah, that's great. That's great. But of course, before we move into all of that and show off some fun stuff, we've got to do that recap, because quite a bit happened last time to set this up. So at the end of last episode, after successfully, you know, brokering a deal to get this big favor off your, this unnamed big favor to Hecate off your back, you have now this list of tasks in front of you. And once you complete them all, you will be free and clear of that favor. Of course, none of these things are small tasks. And right now you are dealing with the big one, the big named favor that you traded in exchange with all the other small favors, retrieving a rose from the Hanging Gardens of Tethys. So luckily, Reynard had actually one of those small favors he brokered kind of stuck in there was securing you all a little bit of help. So you know that when you return, when you're ready to go, you can go back to Reynard's place. You're going to meet up with Arrow, an old friend who is somehow going to help you get to the Hanging Gardens. So that was all good news, all super great. You went back to the house feeling really good about everything, and then Lou has not been able to wake up. So that is the morning, like, where we're going to be starting this episode here. You have basically just discovered that Lou, like, as you two were probably getting ready for the day, like, gearing up, you know, about to go on this big epic mission, you have found that Lou is fast asleep, it appears. And nothing you have done, I think you've tried all the usual stuff at this point, right? Trying to slap someone awake, pouring water on them. So here we are, you two are probably just standing over a slightly snoring Lou, who is curled up in her, like, bathrobe on her bed.
I mean, maybe she's just really tired. She's been a long time. She doesn't really sleep. This is probably good for her.
Aoife is just fucking panicking. And she says, I mean... Lou doesn't sleep. That's the whole point. That's why she, when she told us about the first time that she had dreamed that it was so unusual, because it had never happened before. I mean, what if Hecate's in her mind right now and is trying to get her in debt to her by through some nefarious means? We can't. What are we gonna do?
I mean, I don't know what we could do. We know she has that kind of power, but The other dreams from the past really didn't have anything to do with Hecate, right? They were all related to her ex.
Yeah, to Jada.
So maybe there's just an extended version of that happening.
And Aoife scrunches her face in concern, and she would like to search around Lou's room to see if she can find any of those glass marbles that we had seen before.
You sure can. Right the heck there, rolled like right under the bed, you find one of those uncloudy glass marbles. Now that you've seen several times, now that have been dropped off by the Nuska, you now know they're called those little dream dragons.
Aoife picks it up and perches it between her little fingertips, and she says, "How do they keep getting in? Curse them!"
Maybe we can, like, brew some kind of repellent to keep these things away. But, I mean, we've been at this all morning. I don't really know what else to do. And I mean, Reynard is waiting for us. And I feel like the sooner we get rid of the number of tasks we have ahead of us, I think the sooner we'll be able to help Lou and everyone. And maybe it's best that I go on my own. And if you'd like to stay, you can. But I need to finish this. I started this mess. I got to finish it as fast as I can. And maybe that'll get Hecate, if she is behind this, off of Lou's back.
On your own to the mythical location of some lost race of people with untold danger.
Yeah, I mean, it's not fun.
This would probably be punctuated, by the way, by like a slamming of like a kitchen door and be like, "Where's coffee? Lou." Lou, where's coffee?
Lou's still asleep, Brooke.
Aoife will call out, "She's in here. We're in her room."
And Rook, like, sleepy-eyed, will come and, like, look in and be like,
look at you both. There's some kind of problem.
She's not waking up.
Tony will walk over to Rook and aggressively put her arm around her shoulders and try and like shake her awake, like, you ready to do some adventuring, just the two of us?
Why?
Lou is not waking up. She's not dead. She's alive, but she just seems like she's sleeping.
She's out of commission.
Is this a normal thing for you?
Eva shakes her head quietly now.
Rook says, I'll get my shit.
Well, I'm not gonna leave her. I don't think it's good if we all leave. I'll stay and keep an eye on her, and I'll do some asking around to see if I can maybe figure something out. There's got to be some kind of antidote to get people out of sleep.
You think? For a magical sleep?
Probably. I mean, it's gotta be magical, right? Elves don't sleep, right? I heard that too, right?
And elves shouldn't be able to be magically put to sleep either. That's what's particularly concerning about this matter.
Oh. Well.
Fuck. Well, you know, I knew Hakate wasn't gonna just let us walk away from this, so... Fuck. I don't know how she figured it out so soon.
That's the thing, is I don't see why Hakate would be involved and then go after Lou. If I'm the one who owes this favor, I feel like I'd be the one put to sleep.
I mean, well, clearly we're all in the same boat here, right? Like, you bring all of us with you when you show up to, you know, mess shit up or fix it or whatever. So this is exactly what Fae do. They go after everyone you love, everyone you've ever known, any way they can get to you, Tony. And coming after you might not exactly be the best way to get to you, but hurting the people you like? Yeah. Yeah, this has Hakate written all the fuck over it.
Well, then, fuck her. It's not going to stop me. I have a job to do here. I have a job to do for all of you, for everyone else. We made a promise to Reynard. We did the trade. Yeah, this isn't going to stop anything. I'm ready to go. And Aoife, I think you're right. You should stay behind and figure out what you can. And maybe we'll find something while we're out.
Rook, you better go with Tony. She'll be in way more danger than I will be, I'm sure.
Yeah, no shit.
I'll see what I can find out, because if any one of us could just be dropped at any time like this, then, I mean, we gotta figure out some way to counteract this.
Yeah, I mean...
Okay, wait, hang on. And she, like, runs upstairs, now officially awake, and she comes back down a short while later with a sword, like a big... glowing long sword, and she's like, you need this. I don't know if it'll help, but like just
she hands it to Aoife.
Yeah, just a big ass glowing giant sword, like a comically large ridiculous sword.
Aoife holds out her hands and like Rook thrusts it into her grip, and like she like wavers under and wobbles under the weight of it, and she's like, thanks, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Why are you looking at me like that, Tony? You already have a sword.
I mean, I like weapons too, okay? Jeez.
Well, you have to give me that back, she says to Aoife. It's not like a keepsies, Tony.
Yeah, okay.
Not a lot of magic swords lying around.
Oh, no. After all, that would be a gift, and we can't have those.
Oh, God. It's too soon. It's just too soon. All right. Well, fuck. Let's go. If Hakata is already watching us, no time left. We gotta get this done.
All right, Lou. I mean, sleep tight, I guess. We'll be back. Get some rest. And Hakata, if you can hear me. Maybe, you know what? Never mind. Fuck you.
Fuck off.
Just fuck off for once.
Oh, and Rook will also say, Gordon, Gordon, and he, like, will roll out from under Lou's bed.
Yes.
Watch them, and do something if somebody attacks. You attack them back, but you can't leave the house.
The intruders. Attack the intruders!
Yes, attack-
Not Lou and I.
Right. And Gordon's like, Oh, what can I do? I'm just a tiny pumpkin. We're all like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, we fucking know, right? That's a lie. Cool.
Cordon, where do you have a suppository of seeds somewhere? Do you just...
Ooh, well, that's impolite. Why are you interested?
Perhaps. But if I want my own pumpkin king...
Your own pumpkin king? You want to grow a tiny little pumpkin king from Gordon's own seeds, do you?
Oh, it's like you could have your own little brother. Wouldn't that be nice?
It's hard to read the facial expression of a jack-o'-lantern, but the eyes, like the lights inside, just go to very, very, very small pinpricks. And he's just very, very quiet.
I love this. I love Gordon.
I mean, you could give them to us, or we can cut some out of you.
Hmm. Those are my only two choices.
He just shrugs. Unless he can think of another one.
And there's, like, a really disgusting, like swirling throat gargle sound that comes from somewhere inside the pumpkin. And then there's a, as, like, through one of the jack-o'-lantern, the carved-out teeth, like, a single pumpkin seed just, like, shoots at your feet.
It's your funeral.
Aoife will very delicately pick it up and hand it off to Tony. Well, one down.
She puts it in a little piece of cloth and wraps it up.
Brooke shudders.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of more of this, but okay.
After we hand it off, it's not our problem.
Shall we?
Just like the book. Not your problem.
Yeah, this small favor isn't feeling so small. So what is it?
Small in effort, perhaps.
Can Gordon ask a question?
Ask?
Who are you delivering this seed to?
We're not really sure. Or do we know?
We're not privy to that knowledge as Reynard is...
Reynard? The fox? Reynard? The fox? Reynard the fox, Reynard the fox.
Oh, do you know him?
Have some history, do you?
A great, great many things. A great many things about clever little foxes in clever little patches. Fox. Reynard the fox! Go away! Go away! Gordon does not wish to talk today. And he'll roll back into the shadows under the bed.
Interesting.
That seemed to upset him greatly.
Log that information away to investigate later.
Mental note.
I'm very upset now, too.
Yeah, that's, okay. Rook's like, well, that's it. Cool. We can leave now, right?
Hopefully I'll be able to catch up with you two later, and hopefully with a fully conscious Lou.
Yeah. Best of luck with everything going on here.
Yeah, that'd be, good.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
We don't really have a way of communicating to each other, though, once we're away, right?
No, I don't think you, because y'all don't have, like, any sending stones or anything, and yeah. I don't think anybody's unlocked, like, the message spell or anything, so.
Okay. Yeah, just needed a refresher. All right, Aoife. Take care. We'll be back as soon as we can.
Yeah, don't die.
You having one of those little clovers for me before I jump in the hole?
And she digs through your bag and she's like, I just took them out of the wash and we'll hand you a nice fresh one for you.
Oh, yay. Thank you.
Smells like summer linen.
Oh, that's a good ass smell. Or like summer rain. That's my... All right. So shall we?
We shall.
All right, we're leaving Aoife behind, and with Kit's help, you are able to just open up a hole. Kit seems to, like, trot over to you as if he's been listening this whole time, and he lets out a bark, and in the middle of your living room, just, like, a big hole, exactly like before, opens up into this dirt tunnel, so the exact same kind of entrance that led you to Renard's domain the first time. Sorry, not capital D domain. Just little domain, to clarify.
All right, I'll jump in.
Question, do you want to take the fox with you? You'll have to babysit him, but he can open up portals to Reynard's domain, which might be useful if you think it's worth it to take him with you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like getting there and back. If he can open a portal there, can he do that?
He can only open a portal to Reynard's domain, specifically.
Oh, okay. For sure. Yeah, let's take him.
Are you holding him? Or do you want Rook to do it?
I'll hold him. No, I'll hold him.
Okay, yeah, because Rook looks and goes, Where are you putting the little fox? He's about cat-sized.
Over my shoulder.
All right. Yeah, so you do, and he sort of nestles, like, on top, between your, like, cloak and your backpack, and kind of makes himself, you know, paws down a nice little space there, and you feel, you know, the light grip of his nails dig in just ever so slightly as he holds on there. So Kit is ready and with you, and you pass down through the portal. And just like before, you travel down this really nice tunnel that has its own light, and you, like, make your way there to the same, like, blue door that you saw last time with that fox head knocker, and you pass inside. Reynard is already there waiting for you in this study. Ah! Good to see you again. Good to see the expediency is being taken seriously, but we seem to be down a companion or two.
Yeah, something happened after our meeting last night that has disabled one of our party members temporarily, but we're here, and hopefully you did mention you have some folks who'd be willing to join us, and maybe they can pick up some slack.
I do, as discussed, as traded, have arranged an old friend. And he gestures with one of his, you know, red furred hands, and stepping through a gateway that you don't think was there before. It's very large to accommodate the glorious green furred creature that comes through, as you see Arrow with his, like, pearlescent horn and his wings folded tight up against his body to fit through this gate. But he looks at you with those soulful, you know, horse eyes, and immediately kind of trots over and, like, smushes his head against you.
Oh, I smush it back and I pull his mane over to me and I tighten squeeze and I'm like, Arrow, I've missed you so much. You're here. I can't believe it.
And he lets out a sound, and this is part of the magic of your heroic destiny, because when he does that, you somehow understand. It's not like he's talking to you. It's not like he's talking in his mind, but you understand what he means to you because you two can communicate just, like, magically, as he pushes against you and says, it's good to see you too. I'm glad you're safe.
I'm so glad you're going to be here with us. I feel so much better. I'm going to keep you safe here too.
We can watch each other's backs. It is very strange that Reynard, of all people, has brought us together, but perhaps that is fate in action.
I didn't think it would happen like this. I did not know when I was going to see you again, but I'm so happy it's today.
And he pauses and says, you look troubled, little foal. What is wrong?
Well, I'm scared to go where we're going, especially because my friends aren't with me. I mean, this is Rook. She's also my friend. But
Rook, wide-eyed, staring up this, like, gigantic creature. She seems actually a little bit afraid of this gigantic horse.
But a friend of mine, she's an elf, first of all, and as far as I know, they don't sleep. They don't need to, but she's fallen under some sort of magical sleep, and that's why she's not here. And I'm really worried that the fae that I owe this favor to is the cause behind it, and I don't really know how to fix it. I mean, there's a lot going on. A lot has happened since I saw you last, but I guess that's the freshest thing.
I am sorry for your troubles. I wish there was something I could do to help there, but perhaps completing this mission will be a start. It is fortuitous that we were able to meet, for I am going to the Hanging Gardens as well on a quest of my own.
Oh. What are you hoping to find?
And he kind of swings his head over at Reynard and, like, looks, like, narrows his eyes suspiciously a bit. Let us go, and we shall talk along the way.
That sounds good.
And Reinhardt says, fair enough, fair enough. I'm just a simple fox. Not within the terms of the deal, I need not know why you are going. But, as promised, I have prepared a doorway. So, if you will follow me.
Here we go.
And so you do, and, you know, Arrow stays, like, walking, like, prancing, kind of side by side with the short, measured steps. And you step through the archway into a room that you hadn't seen before. It seems to be some kind of, like, great hall, almost like a ballroom space. And it's just, again, just proving how big and labyrinthian this dwelling really is of the foxes. And you see a wall of, like, 10 doors in a row here. And one he leads you to that is all, like, it's, like, sky blue with white clouds that are drifting slowly across the surface. And Reynard sort of bows and gestures to the door. I would suggest you mount up before stepping through. It's quite a bit of a drop.
Okay. Arrow, may I?
Of course. And he like bends down a little bit to help you on him. Because he's big. He's a freaking gigantic horse. Like, even you have ridden some big horses in your life, but you also think that he's bigger than last time you saw him. There's just something more, just more about him.
He's existing fully in his power now. He ain't nobody's captive.
Yeah, he is here. He is in his power. He's not captive. He's come back into, like, his own. He feels a lot more, like, secure and comfortable.
My boy.
It's the season of Arrow. Yeah, he's doing it.
I climb up and I extend an arm to Rook. Will you join us?
Yeah. Do it. I just, like...
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, get...
Just grab my arm.
Do I just, like, hold... Okay, just, like, what... Do I just hold on to you, or there's no, like, saddle? So do...
Yeah, you'll wrap your legs around Arrow and put your arms around me. Can you handle that?
Yeah. No problem. And she climbs on at 100% someone who has never ridden a horse in their entire life. You see that. You've seen this time after time. Just all the wrong thing, totally wrong. And Arrow, like, is being very patient as she, like, kicks and, like, scrabbles and, like, you know, grabs tail and fur in, like, just the worst way possible. And she is, like, so tense when she gets behind you. And Arrow will, like, whinny again. And he says, your friend is a mess. Are you sure she should go along? Will she fall off?
She might, but I'll hold on to her too, and then we'll get her right off as soon as we get there.
And Rook is like, are you talking to the horse? Is that what's happening?
Yes, we are talking.
You have to tell me if you're talking to the horse. Are you talking about me?
We can talk, and yes, we're talking about you, and we'll continue to talk about you because you look like a damn mess getting up here. Now, point your toes out, heels are in, you're squeezing, but not too tight. Hold your arms around me. She, like, grabs arms either end.
What about the wings? In the wings? Out the wings? Like, what are you... she's, like, trying.
Behind the wings. Behind the wings. Right up against my legs. Get closer.
Okay. She's like, so lightly, like, hanging on to you. Like, she's so clearly uncomfortable.
I grab her hands and, like, pull her into me. And, like, I'm buckling a seatbelt. And I'm like, yeah. Nope, like this. Hold on. Don't let go. We don't know what we're coming through right now, so do your best to not fall off.
This fox does not smell good. I'm just to let you know right now. This just not does this. And Kit, like, yaps.
You too, Kit. Hold on.
Kit seems good. Kit is like, yeah. He nods. All right. And Reynard says, let me get that door for you. And he, like, kind of kicks it open. And the rush of just air, like cold, frigid air, hits you as you are just staring down into, like, an endless expanse of blue sky. And Rook is like, shall we?
All right. Ready? Let's go. And she kicks into Arrow.
Yep. And he just, like, leaps. Gloriously. And as you pass through the door, you see it, it instantly, like, disappears behind you the minute, like, the tip of Arrow's tail makes it outwards. And Rook now, like, grabs you so tight as you just seem to be in free fall for a few seconds here, surrounded by nothing but, like, blue sky and, like, clouds drifting up and above, and that, like, horrendous feeling, right, of, like, your gut, just, like, your stomach in your mouth as just free fall, and then his wings, like, expand. And I don't even know if you've seen them, like, out all this far, but it's, like, you know, probably, like, a 14-foot wingspan. It's huge to hold up this, like, gargantuan creature, right? And you just, like, catch a drift of the air, and you've never experienced anything like this. This feeling of freedom, because it's still like he's running on the air, almost like it is somehow solid ground to him, so you feel his muscles, like, rippling below you, and, like, the beat of the wings.
God! Oh my God!
How you feeling? You loving this?
Yeah, I am exhilarated. This is amazing. She lets out such a scream of joy and, like, yipping and yapping and going, woohoo, yeah! It's incredible.
Yeah, you can feel Rook's face is, like, shoved, like, into your cloak, like, into your back. She's trying to not look at, like, any of this. And Kit, similarly, is, like, the nails digging in. You are the only person riding on this majestic beast that is having a good time.
Oh, and I am ignoring them as much as I can.
Yeah, and Arrow, again, you can somehow hear this, even though you shouldn't, because it is loud, right? You are moving through, wind is roaring past as, like, he is climbing through the clouds. But Arrow says, it is so good to share this with you, the feeling of flight, my friend.
I've never felt anything like this. I can't believe you just get to do this all the time. Thank you so much for letting me ride and you coming with us today.
It is good to have you. Like I said, I am on a quest of my own. The Hanging Gardens are not unfamiliar to my people. In fact, many of us were born there.
Oh, wow.
My great-great-great-grandparents were actually born in the Hanging Gardens, and I wish to find a little of my own history by visiting.
Why aren't your people there anymore?
We don't really know. We know the Titans made us. We are celestial creatures, after all, and we served them for some time. But how much do you know of the Alicorns and our plight?
I don't believe I know a whole lot. Should I roll for it?
You don't know anything. You sure probably
don't. I don't think I know anything. I don't know much. I would love to learn all about you and where you come from.
Well, there isn't much to tell, sadly. I'm, one of the last of a dying breed. In fact, the leader of the last bands. That's why we're staying with the Forest Court. It's the only place that's given us sanctuary. Once the Titans were gone, we're not exactly sure what quite happened to all of us, but we were pretty much hunted, captured to extinction, and things have not gotten any better in recent times. I'm hoping to find something here that perhaps will tell us more, if there's a way to make more of our kind. But very few foals are born now.
Do you know if that has anything to do with what makes this place so dangerous? What do you know of the Hanging Gardens, other than this is where your kind came from?
I do not know much. Much has been lost, as my people have been destroyed. But legends say that Alicorns were created here, that somehow the Titans made us here. So I think there is something within the gardens that is very precious, that was used somehow to make us. I do not know. But once the Titans were gone, there was no one to protect us. And so we began to decline. So I assume that's what the dangers are, whatever safeguards have kept this place here. Much else of the Titans, of my history, of our people, has been lost.
Well, I don't know what you know of our mission, but we're here to just get a rose from these gardens. I think that's simple and, well, sounds simple enough, but I'll do whatever I can to help you learn what you can. I think it's important and so rare to learn more about where you come from and what made you and how to survive. Those things are important for survival.
And you just get this feeling, this just empathetic feeling of, like, appreciation washes over you. As you think that's coming from Arrow, like a feeling of kinship. Well, plucking a rose is simple enough. I am sure both of us will find what we seek.
I'm sure we will.
And Rook is like, I'm gonna throw up. She like whispers in your ear. She's like, I don't, where, this is so bad.
Deep breaths, Rook. She's gonna like squeeze her arms that are around her and be like, I'm still here. I'm still holding on to you. Don't worry. You're not falling off.
Yeah. And as this happened, you do, you know, you say that, take a deep breath. And as you do, you realize like your own lungs kind of strain against the very thin air up here. Wherever you are, you've got to be up so high. Like the temperature and then the fact that it's hard to breathe and you can feel the pressure like building on your sinuses too. So you must be very, very far above the ground. You can't even see it. Like you just clouds and blue below you. That's how far up you are. And Arrow is just continuing to fly. And as you look around you here, you don't really see anything other than blue and sky. Certainly nothing to indicate like a hanging garden is like here as you're continuing forward.
So what are we looking for exactly while we're up here? How do we know when we've found what we're looking for?
So the legends say that the gardens were hidden by some kind of powerful magic. Really, only those with the proper senses to find it could ever even locate the Hanging Gardens. I'm hoping that my blood, my connection to this place, will be enough. I think I feel it beyond. But I can't see anything. Can you see anything?
Just gonna really try to scan for like a weird figure around a cloud or like a light bending in a strange way.
Yeah. Go ahead and make me a perception check.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. That's 17.
Okay, that's pretty good. So I'm going to say, you know, as you are continuing forward and Arrow's like sort of talking through like what he's feeling and sensing, you are like scanning around looking for any kind of indication, anything different basically than what you're seeing. And eventually after a few minutes of doing this, something strange like appears. You know, you think it's probably about like a mile or so away from where you are, but you're like looking at this one piece of sky and something about it just seems to waver or just shimmer a bit, just almost like a heat mirage reflection. It just, something about that area reads as a little strange to you.
Arrow, can you see that little weirdness happening over there up ahead?
He kind of like swings, like cranes his neck and looks. I think so, but I don't see anything beyond it.
Maybe start heading that way and see if you feel any differences as we get closer.
All right. He does. He like takes off, you know, directly for that space there. And you continue forward toward that point and Arrow says, yes. Yes, it's there. Somehow it's there. I can't see it, but it's there.
Oh, amazing. What do you feel? What does it feel like?
It's like home. It's like a feeling of home.
I think that's what we're looking for.
Should I just fly into it? Just
I think that's what we should do.
He, like, just soars, you know, directly for it, adjusts course, and, like, as he kind of turns up towards this to fly into this, like, you know, Rook, like, shudders behind you, and there's, like, a fox whine as you just go and you crest and you start climbing up these drifts of air, and then you pass, like, through whatever this glimmering form is, and you can tell there's definitely something here, and as you pass through it, there's almost a feeling like moving through liquid, and as you emerge on the other side of whatever this is, you see something in front of you. Hanging, like midair, suspended by nothing, is this gigantic cube in the sky. And it's covered in what look like mirror panels. So it's incredibly dizzying as you're looking at it. You're seeing like this weird reflection of sky and light, but this thing has got to be, it's incredible. You've never seen anything this big in your whole life. as you're looking at it, you can see maybe, and it's hard to see again, like a narrow gap in it that opens up. But like the height of this cube, it's just, it's incredible. Like you have no idea how somebody couldn't notice this fortress thing in front of you here.
Wow. This is beautiful.
Yes. I... It all seems so familiar. Well, should we head for the... It seems like that's the only entrance there, and he seems to indicate, like, that narrow slit where you can kind of see a black line that must lead into, like, a hallway or something inside. Like, that's the only reason you can see it against, like, the mere walls that seem to surround this space. Otherwise, he says, I think I can see a platform at its base.
Yeah, let's go for that. I trust you.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and make me another set of perception checks.
Oh, that's 22.
That is very good. So you're like, yay, success. Everybody's like diving towards this entrance. All good. You're getting closer and closer because you're probably about like a mile or so away when you like saw this structure. So you're going, getting closer, and then you start to see things coming from the far side around you, like creeping around the edge of this, one of the cube faces. You see a gargantuan form that just emerges from the clouds as you see like a beak and then a head, and it's connected to arms, like these huge wings that just like almost the size of one of these cubes on either side. And as you come around, you're like a gigantic bird, like that's what it looked, but you see that its face, its beak, all these things seem to be made of like these metal plates on either side of it. You've never seen anything like it. In our modern day, it would look a lot like a fighter jet or something. But this gargantuan construct bird seems to come around the side of it. An arrow, like just a feeling of panic, like comes over you. He kind of stalls for it. And this massive thing swoops around the side and is clearly starting to head right for you. You see this gargantuan, like, mechanical bird is coming for you. And when I say gargantuan, I actually mean huge, as in the size, like, in the monster manual, which is probably, like, an elephant, about the size of an elephant. So easily probably three times the size of Arrow. Coming right for you. And this thing, because you don't see machines in fantasy worlds, right? So this is probably pretty impressive as it's flapping. So however, even though it's made of metal, it seems to be able to flap its wings and move with the agility of a normal bird. And just as this is happening, this is diving for you, right? Arrow is like pretty much screaming in your mind, like, what do we do? I don't think I can outrun it.
Do you think you can get inside before it reaches us?
There's a feeling of like, I don't think so. I can try.
Well, we might just have to try to fight it then.
He like says, hold on, in your head.
Hold on. Tight. Grabs Rook. Hold on, Rook.
Rook looks like, you know, out of her cloak and like looks at the thing like, oh my god. Oh my god, why? Like, as that, again, an arrow does, like, a straight almost dive bomb. He almost goes, like, you know, 180, just trying to race, bring you towards, like, that platform he can see. And there's, like, this mechanical grinding sound that comes from this creature. It's a horrible noise of, like, gears or something moving from deep within it. There is no way, there is absolutely no way you're going to make it before this thing gets to you. The way it moves, it is faster than you. But from afar, the other side, we hear a voice. I imagine this comes over some kind of magical loudspeaker that is attached to your ship, dear Sage. What does our dear friend Gidget say to us?
Blasting over the speaker, you hear calling out these commands as, you know, emerging from behind a set of clouds, you see this sailing ship that is equally aloft in the air, and you hear, "Tack the main sails! Creatures over there, don't worry! We are here to help!"
Just like booming over like a megaphone from this ship held aloft by a big balloon, like a Zeppelin style ship that is just coming, like emerged from a cloud bank.
I don't think they can hear us, but okay. Anytime you can help is great.
Let's go ahead and probably roll some initiative here. It seems about right.
Gidget! Oh my god! How fun!
Here she is. For those of you who are like, who dis? This is a character from the Fate campaign. Don't worry, you don't have to know anything. You could meet her for the first time right now. But that's why we're all excited. All right, I got some stuff to roll. Tony, I'm just going to have you roll for the crew on top of Arrow right now.
Oh, I got 21.
Let's have you roll for Arrow. Go ahead and roll me a d20. I've got his stats right here.
Well, that was a 3 that I rolled.
Okay, not great. So he got like a 6. Okay. I'll roll for Rook. Can you roll for the ship, Sage?
Yeah, the ship got a 16 and Gidget got a 6.
Rook rolled a 3, which is probably about right for her situation and how terrible she is feeling. I'm going to say right now in space, on your left, Tony, the bird is about 60 feet away from you, like soaring and coming in fast.
Oh, God.
The ship that Gidget is driving, the ship that just yelled out at you, is about 60 feet away from you on the right. So you're pretty much like in between these two things that are happening. And you right now are probably from the entrance of the where you need to go to get into the Hanging Gardens here. You are about 200 feet probably away. So a lot of parts moving here at this exact moment. So Tony, we are starting off with you. So you obviously can't move because you are currently mounted on Arrow. So your actions are going to be limited by what you can do here. Unless you want to dismount, which I would encourage you not to do.
Yeah, probably not. Not a whole lot I could do. No, I don't have anything ranged. Literally, I have a whip. That's the farthest reach I have.
Or you can choose to hold your action and wait for a trigger. So this would be something like, I'm going to delay my action until X happens, right? So like, if the bird comes within like melee range of me, I will make a melee attack, is something you could do.
I can't do that simultaneously while taking my defensive stance, right? I mean, can I take a defensive stance while I'm riding a horse?
Yeah, I think so. You can, you're holding out your shield and basically I think you're covering, you know, Rook and Kit.
Yeah.
And shielding what you can.
Yeah, I would rather do that. I'd rather take a defensive stance.
Taking the dodge so that attacks against you have disadvantage, always good.
I like that.
And you make dexterity saving throws with advantage.
Yes, I like that option.
Yeah, you've got your shield up and you are doing everything you can to like lean and dodge and like, you know, get down on Arrow to just make this as like easy as possible to avoid whatever this creature is going to do. And Arrow will also, like, you hear in his mind, like, if we could get behind the ship, that would give us cover.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that we try and get around as close to the ship as possible while going back up too.
So the ship, like I said, was 60 feet away from you. I'm just noting this down for everyone. 60 feet. Bird, 60 feet there. Because we come now to the ship. So, Captain, you get to decide. For the ship's action, it will move each turn. It can move up to 60 feet, including one 90-degree turn in that radius, but no more because ships are not as agile as horses or birds. What would you like it to do? Where would you like it to go? You could intercept them if you wanted. You're like just within range here.
I think she would move so that if Arrow wanted to land on the ship, that they could. To kind of move to try and intercept.
Okay, so yeah, you see this like big ship, Tony, just move and point directly towards you and fly right at you. And Arrow kind of climbs a little bit up into the air, so you are basically like hovering above the ship down below. So now you can see for the first time like the top deck of this. And it does. It looks like one of those, you know, imagine like a single mast like sailboat, right? But it has like a nice cabin and stuff. That's about the size we're dealing with here. And you are drifting above this big like balloon that is keeping it lit. You can see all kinds of strange like mechanical and arcane devices on board the ship, including these big cannons that apparently all these you see four gnomes total. So this team of four gnomes that are just like running all over the place, they seem to be taking orders from a gnomish woman. You can just see like bright pink hair and huge goggles. That's like really all you can see as they're darting over the ship, like turning these strange cannons. And you see like a big engine thing strapped to the back that's like letting off this like cloud of smoke, powering it from below. So that's your view now as you're drifting up above this ship here.
Hello, down below.
Does Gidget say anything as the ship is like racing towards you? You have this intercom speaker device, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. And she says, feel free to land if it would so benefit you. Otherwise, this thing is, it's a pretty wretched guardian.
Oh, a guardian. Okay. Arrow, I feel like the ship is not faster than us, though, is it?
Alicorns technically are slower, so they're about 50 feet, I think. They're just short of this. Whatever the heck this, like, engine on the back of this thing is doing, it is giving some speed.
Yeah, let's land real quick, Arrow. Let's drop off Rook and Kit, at least, and then we might take off again just to try something if we can, but let's land.
Okay. Yeah, Rook said, and Era's like, yes, so you get that affirmation. So that was the ship just moving up and underneath you. But now we have the big burb, which, boy, is it fast. Boy, is it so fast. Luckily, this ship is, like, racing towards it, and you all, as a flying horse, are slightly less threatening than this ship. So this creature, you see, it swings around, almost like treads, right? You see its claws, like, come up, like, do-do-do, move across its body into a position, like, in the front, where they can go ahead and grip. And it, like any, like, raptor or bird of prey, just strikes out, like, with these claws, intending to grab and crush the body of the ship here. So, let's go ahead and roll some stuff. So, a 20 is going to hit the ship, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so it crushes down with its talons, and you all feel, like, the, you know, the strain of the gears and the wood against this thing's, like, massive amount of power here as it's trying to crush. 8 plus 9 is 17. 17 damage, so I think that's just over its damage threshold.
As this bird lets out this just vicious attack, you just see it just like assaults like these once smooth and like beautiful planks of wood, and it just shreds them off. And you see like underneath, inside, you see the inner workings of the ship, and you see all these just like strange mechanical contraptions and moving gears and pulleys.
You hear, like, ah, like, coming from your crew as they are, like, running to, you know, try and tighten the hatches and, oh, no, it, like, you know, move over to try and cover anything, like, keep it from falling out the bottom of the ship. So it took a blow, but it's not too bad for now, but you're not going to be able to take a ton of these. Oh, it actually gets its second attack now, so it comes in with its beak, trying to drive that towards the ship here. Okay, yeah, that's like a 30-something to hit. So it's going to hit you with the beak. Oh, okay, it's only 13 damage.
Hell yeah, damage threshold. As, like, the bird comes in with its beak, and you just hear this clang of metal on metal, and you see it sort of reverberate through the creature's, like, body as it, like, it just shudders as it doesn't like that feeling of that resonance just sort of creep and reflect back through it.
Yeah, I imagine it's like seeing a bird peck something that it didn't think was hard. It's gonna, like, pew, pew, and then you hear a crunch, and, like, it, like, crunches the end of its beak just a little bit, and it, like, you know, it lets go of the ship with its feet and is, like, hovering up above and seems to be, like, you know, circling around now for its next pass. But that, we've made it through the burb's turn. So now we go to your first free crew member. So this could either be the person who isn't Gidget, right, that isn't driving the ship. If you want, you can spend their action to start loading the cannons. Because remember, it takes 3 actions to fire.
Absolutely, spend that first action loading it, You're preparing the arcane ammunition.
Okay, so cannon one is loaded. So Nassim, so you know, these are siege weapons. And so the audience knows. So in the Dungeon Master's Guide, there is an oft overlooked section called siege weapons that has things like cannons and, you know, mangonels and trebuchets and stuff that kind of have their own rules. They work the same way as weapons for the most part. You roll to attack and they have set damage, but because they're so large and they do so much damage, they take a few actions to work. So to fire one of these cannons, you have to spend one action to load it. You have to spend one action to aim it, and then it's an action to fire it. It's a whole team effort, just as it was in real warfare, because these things are big and you're firing heavy, heavy stuff.
All right.
All right. That was the crew member. He's like loading something in. Or actually, tell me, describe this crew member and name for me, please.
Yeah, so this crew member is, as they are, they're all gnomes, but this one is an older gentleman who has across his nose and through, like, down diagonally across his cheek, he has this large scar. And his name is Jex, and he wears this very stately, very, you know, official looking and beautiful, like, navy uniform.
Is it, you can decide, is this a Furies uniform or an Empire uniform?
That's an Order of the Furies uniform. Yeah.
All right. I don't think, Tony, you would know anything about that, but you clearly recognize that this person is dressed in a military uniform of some kind. Not from an army or force you recognize, but that probably is slightly comforting to you.
Yeah.
That these aren't like pirates or something.
Right.
Is everybody wearing these uniforms, or is it just this individual?
I think the three crew members would be. Gidget, with her pink mohawk, is not.
So these three dressed in some kind of uniform taking orders from this pink-haired gnome.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably comforting to Tony. Okay, so that was that crew member there, and then we come to Arrow. So Arrow will follow your instructions and take you down aboard this vessel here, and Rook will slide off miserably, and Kit will, like, cling to you, unsure what you want him to do.
Just stay where you are, buddy.
Okay, he grabs on tighter with the nails. Luckily, you're wearing armor. Otherwise, this would hurt significantly more. He's in your leather armor. There's no way. He's not going anywhere. And Arrow will prance nervously. So it was just that fly down, just his movement. So, I mean, Arrow obviously doesn't have any kind of ranged attacks or anything else, but is there anything you would like him to do?
No, I think for now, as long as he stays back and keeps the others protected, like, stay in front of Rook. If Rook doesn't seem like she feels comfortable doing anything or moving on the ship, maybe just, like...
She'll get there. You think she's just taking a moment, like the seasick moment, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, unslinging her crossbow and, like, looks like death, looks like absolute hell, but she's, you know...
Mm-hmm.
She's gonna figure it out, so on her turn, she'll take a turn and be able to do something, but...
Okay. Then, yeah, just for now, Arrow, just stay covered, stay back.
And Arrow is, yeah, he's swinging his head around, you know, looking around. A horse on a ship, not something you see every day, so he's, like, really uncomfortable, right? His legs are splayed a little bit more than you might expect, and he's towering above these gnomes, right, come up to maybe his kneecaps.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're three and a half feet tall at most, and they're, like, in fear staring up at him. Like, all the ones in uniforms are just like, what? Gidget, or this pink-haired gnome, doesn't seem to give a fuck at all. She gives no fucks. She's, like, in the zone. And then Gidget, that brings us to you.
Gidget's about 3.5 feet tall, lighter skin, this bright pink mohawk that peeks out from underneath this captain's hat with these brass goggles that take up the majority of her face. And she's wearing this very, very cool leather armor that you can see is reinforced with a variety of, like, metal splints that enhance it. And then you can see that are etched on them are these arcane glyphs. And she pulls out this just honking crossbow, too, as she kind of gives a nod to Rook, is like, respect.
Yeah, Rook is like, and he looks green, but nods.
And she will take a shot at this creature.
Hell yeah. Let's go.
And she doesn't even load ammunition into it. You just see these, like, blue bolts just sort of appear in the loading mechanism of the crossbow.
Gidget got a glow up 10 years later. Gidget got hard.
Yeah, Tony is loving all this action, honestly. She's like, this is the coolest fucking fight I've ever been in.
You have no idea what's happening, but it's all good. You feel like you're in capable hands.
Yeah.
So she got an 18 to hit for that first hit.
Yeah, that hits.
Ooh, hell yeah. Max damage for 11 magic damage.
You fire off, and it lands in this thing, and you can see where it, like, the magic energy causes it to punch through the metal, and there's, like, a little crackle of electricity, right, where this bolt is sticking out before it winks out of existence. But you've punched a small hole in this thing.
Nice. And a 16 to hit for the second one.
16 will also hit. It's a huge, it is such a big target, it's hard not to miss it.
And that will be another 10 damage.
Whoo, nice. So, like clockwork, firing off into this thing. Clearly, this gnome knows what she's doing. That is going to carry us now to Rook, who looks, like, at her crossbow and then looks at the cannons and kind of looks at you, Tony. Like, what you want her to do. So she could help with the cannons or she could fire her own crossbow.
What deals more damage?
The cannons do, like, 8d10.
Okay,
there's
cannons.
Some bullshit.
Cannons.
Okay. Yeah, because she looks at her crossbow, which isn't magical, but you're looking at this bird that's made of metal, and you see just the math, like, spin in Rook's head for a bit, and she, like, drops the crossbow and then mm-hmm. moves over to help this gnome. Rook seems to know her way around a cannon. No idea, but, like, with that, she's like, yep, she's like, hops in the seat and, like, turns it around and spins it, and the gnome is like, whoa, as, you know, this giant woman is, like, helping to spin it around. So it is nice and properly aimed. So cannon number one is now loaded. It is now aimed and ready to fire. So that actually brings us back up to Tony now.
Then I'll fire that fucking cannon.
Yeah, jump in that seat. Boop, boop, boop. So I believe it was a plus six, right, to hit with it?
Plus six to hit, and it does 8d10 bludgeoning, force damage, as it shoots these arcane blasts of force energy.
Yeah, I imagine these look like, you know, mad scientists, like, doomsday devices, right, where it's this long thing, and then it goes, right, like, at the edge, and then, like, pew, and it shoots off into the sky.
Well, that plus six means I rolled a 21 to hit.
Ooh, baby, yes.
And what was the damage die you said? 8 what?
8d10.
8d10. Force damage. Enjoy that.
So I want to read it out loud, and then you guys can math for me.
Okay. Sage is a math professional.
5.
I'm leaving this to you, Sage.
10. I think that's 9, 4, 8, and 3. Was that 8? Did I give you 8?
48.
It's disgusting. That's a disgusting amount of damage.
Did I give you all of them? Oh, there's another 5 in there.
53.
Yeah.
Yikes! Okay, so what is it? And so this is force damage. So basically in D&D, that's like laser damage.
Oh.
Because they just couldn't use, like, what do we do? The sci-fi damage. I don't know. So it's like that. So what does this, like, hit look like? You don't bring it down, but, like, this is a very serious blow.
I think we catch its wing, one of its wings, like its left wing, as it was coming in to, like, flap again, but, like, catches it so it's, like, it bends the metal of its joints so that it's, like, folded. Now it's stuck like this. It's folded into itself, essentially, so it can't fully spread. It's gonna fly wonky, hopefully in an effort to slow it down.
You see the wing, like, crumples in on itself, and the force of this magic attack actually melts a bunch of the stuff around it here. So you actually see it welds, like, this wing that gets crumpled into its body, right? So now the metal that was fusing it together is all, like, fucked up and, like, looks like sludge, right, against its thing. And you see it spins, like, into a corkscrew, right? Like, not having that point to it. And you hear this, like, god-awful high-pitched whirring sound that comes from somewhere within it. And then a tearing sound as you see, like, the top, the skin of this thing rips off the top of it, and then crunch, crunch, crunch unfolds to make another wing on the side of it. So it's ripped off part of it here. So you can see now like these turning mechanisms and gears on the inside of it where it just seems to have been able to reallocate its skin to make itself a functioning wing as it circles back down.
Fuck.
So, I mean, you fucked it up and like it does not look good at all. Like the conceit that it is a bird thing is very far gone now, but it had, I guess, the intelligence or the ability to rework itself.
All right. Just got to keep peeling back those layers.
There's like a fuck that comes from Rook on the far side here. So far out of her depth. She's here to kill Faye. This is very strange. Gidget would probably love this, though. This is like looking at these things because Gidget has been studying these from far away for a while. Ooh, getting to see one on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I think all the other gnomes, too, are like, ooh, and kind of stop, you know, looking at the cannons. Like, almost like they're about to take notes, but they're like, no, no, no. Tense situation.
Yeah, Tony's in like a state of both amazement and shock and wonder and fear and just can't take her eyes off of it while trying to do other things. Like, what the hell is this? Where are what we?
You've never seen anything. Yeah, this is...
What the fuck did I just see?
So fucking strange. So different than anything you've been dealing with so far. Now we come to the ship. So the ship gets to move.
I think since the creature has backed off a bit away from us, I think she wants to have it back up away even farther because we have the advantage of 600 feet on the range on these cannons. So she's like, let's just back this boy up. We get some distance.
Because I will say, like, looking ahead, you've been studying, you and your crew have been studying, like, the gap in the entrances. You have confirmed you've been all around this cube. And the only entrance is that column that you've seen so far. And it's got that tiny little landing platform. Mm. And you think this is probably very intentional, Gidget has hypothesized by design. Your ship, any other ship, will not be able to fit in here. You could probably dock and get people in, but you're not going to be able to fly your ship in here. So that makes sense. Your best option is probably to destroy this thing and then maybe land and send a crew in. And then, like, a small, you know, routine team, and then send your ship back out to wait. That's probably your best bet. So, in accordance with this, you go, whoop, 60 feet, like, out away from the cube here, just to give yourself a little bit of range.
Yeah.
And as you suspect, you are still within range of the creature's sensors. You have found, through testing and hypotheses, that about 300 feet away from the cube is the point at which these creatures no longer pursue you, but you are well within that distance at this point. So you pull back to 260 feet away.
Cool.
But there you go. Gidget Smarty Pants, you've been here for like a week or so, you know, studying these things, freaking patterns. So this is very exciting. You finally get to see it all up close.
All in action.
loving this. All right. So you pull back. That does not stop the bird, which is clearly upset by all of this nonsense. So it is going to come in with a vengeance, with a beak and a claw attack. So starting again with those claws. Luckily, the ship is too big for it to grapple, because otherwise you would be so dead.
That'd be a problem.
30 to hit with its talons. 22 slashing damage. So what breaks on the ship this time?
Yeah, I think as it comes in with its talons and it just grabs hold of the easiest thing, which would be the mast, and you just see all of the rigging just get ripped apart.
Yeah, and you have, because you have one of your gnome crew, tell us the name. So I imagine Jax was probably loading the cannon. So who is the poor crew member that is trying to deal with the rigging and like position it? Who has to dodge for their life?
So Kimber is this young woman who she is. She's got this like short, like aqua blue bobbed haircut, and she is in charge of all of the navigation.
She's going to have a miserable time from here on out.
She's just swearing, like, fuck! No, I just succeeded last time!
A whole, like, netting, like, a rigging, ropes just, like, is ripped through, and you see it go spinning, like, onto, like, the earth far down below, and just the fuck, fuck, fuck doesn't stop the tragedy of this, as she's like, hang the fuck on! And, you know, she's, like, running other rigging and trying to get a sail as your ship falters, and you can feel it, you know, starting to keel from side to side now that it doesn't have something controlling it against the force of the wind up here that even these flaps are generating. You actually feel your ship like starting to shake in the direction this thing is pushing away from you. So Kimber's having a fucking miserable time, but we got this beak attack we gotta do too. But this beak, ooh, shit, it's got so much. Guys, this is a CR 11. For those of you who might appreciate it, guess what stat block this is? Because we're doing callbacks to Fate.
Is this a rock?
This is a rock, baby. This is a rock made metal. Sure is. Sure is. Rock in a hard place.
Also, one of my favorite fucking fights from that campaign.
Good ass fight.
Good ass fight.
Boom, callback. Alright, so that's a 20 to hit. Fuck. You guys might be screwed. When Mama Katie's away, Celeste is so mean.
God, don't say that. We can do this. We're adults.
21. How's your ship looking, dude?
It's got another 238 hit points for the ship, so.
I would say the rock and the ship both look about the same in terms of good. Ooh, ooh. All right, so you get a good ship off thing off here. So we go to now the crew. So Jex is probably back up here if you want to give him something to do. Tell us a little bit about this third gnome we haven't seen yet who is navigating, I'm assuming, like trapped down there trying to do their goddamn best to fly a ship that doesn't have a sail.
Under the decks, in charge of all of the systems of pulleys and everything that work, all of the like the arcane and mechanical operations below decks, you see Sarabelle, who has this just head of bright blonde golden perfect ringlet curls and these bright green eyes, and she's racing around on like a on the back of this mechanical boar. Just pulling all of these, like, levers and pulleys and crankshafts and everything. Yep.
Yep. Running around desperately trying to tighten the this and the turn the that to keep this thing stable as it's losing a sail. Yes, but anyway, that's Sarabelle down there. But this is Jax, who's up here running around on the cannon. So it is his turn. Would you like him to go ahead and load another cannon?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do it. So you load up the cannon, like clockwork. He is ready to go. So cannon number one is loaded once again. All right. And then Arrow's turn. He ain't sure what to do in this situation. So he'll chill or like keep, you know, doing the dodge action or whatever, unless you have something specific you want him to do.
I think the dodge action is good.
Yeah. So he is, you know, trying to make himself as small as possible on this boat that is very small. Poor beast. So I'm gonna, if you just want him to keep dodging, I'll just take him out of the fight initiative for now.
Okay.
He and Kit can hold up together.
There's not much a horse can do in this situation, so.
Understandable.
There it is. He's here for moral support. Yeah. On his turn, he's like, you're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I feel it. Just his presence is doing things for me.
All right. Gidget, what you got for us, babe?
Seeing that this bird is getting itself tangled up within the rigging, tearing, just throwing away the sail with its beak.
Mm-hmm.
It is, I imagine, close enough so that Gidget looks up to it. And you see she pulls from her bag this vial of red liquid and she hucks it as she is casting a heat metal.
Woo!
So.
This is gonna suck for me.
So it's going to take 2d8 fire damage, and then on each of her turns as a bonus action, she can cause that damage to happen again.
Wow.
Yeah, manufactured, does that mean it just happens automatically, or is that the higher level of the damage?
You cause the object to glow red hot. Any creature in physical contact with the object takes 2d8 fire damage when you cast it, and you can use a bonus action to proc it again. If the creature is wearing it or holding it, they have to make a con save or otherwise drop it.
Yeah, so it can't drop it, so it's going to have disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks until the start of its next turn while this is happening. So as long as it's ongoing, it's going to have disadvantage, which is great because it's on fire. It's so on fire. So you're like, burn, bitch! So go ahead and roll me that 2d8 fire. Oh, Jesus Christ.
9 fire damage.
Oh, the disadvantage. That sucks. So this whole thing starts to, like, glow red hot. And at first, the bird doesn't seem terribly concerned. But as that, like, creeping glow moves across it, you see it's just kind of, it's, like, twitching and almost seeming to, like, malfunction, right? As it's trying to, like, move its head and, like, bites its beak back at its wings like a bird would do, like when it doesn't know what's quite wrong with it, but like you maintain that focus to keep that heat just ongoing round after round. Ooh, all right. That sucks. Okay, good. Good move. And Rook is like, damn, okay. And then just goes, and she's just following Jex at this point. Like, so she is going to go ahead and use her turn to aim it once again. And then Tony.
We're going to fire it. Yes, we are.
You want to fire that bad boy? Fire that bad boy. Let's do it.
That's 17 to hit.
Whoo, yep.
Whoa. Okay, so that's 2 + 2 + 4 + 5 + 3 + 9 + 8 + 9.
Holy shit.
42.
Okay, yeah. So you go ahead and just... Pew, what's another big-ass hit that you get on this thing? Describe it for me, Tony.
I would like this to go straight for its fucking head. Like, the force is like it's... like it's melting its head into its own neck. Like... crumbling into itself like a can of Pepsi.
Yeah, like it's crunching, like almost like a turtle.
Yeah, like you're crushing a can on your forehead.
And because this thing is now melty hot, it just, the shape of it, right? Like the metal, like, collapses. So you hit it right square between the eyes. So it still has, like, that pointy, like, steel edge that was built into its beak, probably like the prow of a ship almost, right? That structural part of its frame, it seems to be made of a harder material. But everything else other than that point, like, just smashes into itself. So the body becomes really compacted with these gigantic wings on either side. So you're looking at something that almost looks like a TIE fighter or something now, like, as this thing is just... it's lost all illusion of being bird-shaped as you're blasting this thing to hell. But it shows no signs of stopping. It seems to be just locked on, target locked on to you all.
I didn't take my extra attack last time. I need to do that this time.
You didn't. So with your extra attack, I will say what you can do. If you would like, you can use that to load the cannon.
Uh-huh.
So like you, because it's 3 steps to fire it, right? And I would say with your extra attack, if you wanted, you could go ahead and use it to load one of those steps. Or if you wanted to, let's just say there are like longbows laying around here on the ship. Maybe even Jex by you clearly has something. So if you do want to fire an arrow at this creature, you could certainly do so.
Mm-hmm.
Rook's crossbow is right there.
I think let's do the bigger damage. Let's aim it again.
Cool. All right. So you use your turn actually loading it this time.
Oh, yeah. Loading it.
Tony has military training, but so she probably knows how to do this in theory, but have you ever actually, like, loaded a cannon yourself?
I imagine, yes, it's probably a different cannon. That's probably something...
this weird arcane... You're, like, dumping a bunch... imagine, like, a tub of arcane dust that you're pouring into, like, this thing. Because there's nothing, like, to load. There's not, like, an iron ball, like a normal cannon, right? Because it's magic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she's not really part of, like, the artillery regiment, but, yeah. But you are at first trained a little bit in everything, so that should you need to be moved around. So she has some basic knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, okay, this is where we put it in, right? And then here's the big swabby thing to, like, get it in there, right? You, like, take it out of Jax's hand and, like, shove it in there. You're like, wow. So that's awakening all these, you know, distant memories of, like, when you did this, yeah, your first year of soldier school.
Yep.
But you go ahead and, yeah, you load this thing up with your action. Anything else? Anything you're doing for your bonus?
Does the react work if the thing is doing damage to the ship versus an ally?
No, I think because they're both so big. Like,
then no.
But we now come to the ship's turn. So, if you pulled back, you know that Gidget, from your experience, this thing probably... Well, you actually haven't tried to piss it off yet and then backed out of range. But if you move 40 feet further, it's never pursued you beyond there. So that's a risk you could take. Or you could stay here, or you could move forward. You've got so many options, dear captain.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to try and back it up and see if it will retreat, because then we could get another shot off as it's, you know, flying back to its perch. So she shouts below to Sarahbell, reverse thrusters!
And Sarahbell goes,
I'm giving it everything I can, captain! We got no more juice!
And yeah, the ship will slowly back away.
I'll give her everything we've got, captain! If I could do a Scottish accent, I'd be doing it for you, but I can't. So, and you hear, there's like a click, click, click sound, and then there's like a, ooh, a very unsatisfying thing as like the engine seems to cut, and you're like, oh no, as you start to go all into that free fall moment, but then like you're all jammed forward as the engine like clicks back on and you're like, you sail back out that 60 feet. And as you get past like that 20 foot mark, right, the end of your boat just like goes right over that line, you hear another of those like shrieking sounds and a, like a power down sound come from the big bird. And those big, like, red sensors that used to be eyes, but now you just see are, like, big, smashed, like, blinking red lights in the head of this compressed thing turn green. And the creature seems to change and, like, fly off. It, like, totally turns its back on you as it heads back into some kind of patrolling motion like you've seen it do several times before. You have a perfectly clear shot, y'all. You want to take it?
Hell yeah.
Fire those cannons!
Aim and fire!
Hell yeah. So I will say it's retreating here. So if you want to use, if Tony, if Gidget, if Jax, if Rook, if you all use your turns, I'll say you can get fire both cannons on this thing.
Oh, hell yeah. I think, yeah, as soon as she sees it like turn, she's just hauling her ass over to that cannon.
Yes. Okay, so Sage, you go ahead as Gidget, roll me one cannon, and then Nassim is Tony. Go ahead and roll me one cannon.
Ooh, that is a 16, so we gonna hit.
I didn't hit. I got 11.
No! Okay, so your shot goes wide as you are, like, turning around. I'm trying to get that off. So that one goes screwy. Maybe cannon number two hasn't been calibrated recently. Shame on you, Gidget, and your crew. But go ahead and fire that first one. Roll that damage for me. Sage rolling damage, I'm always scared.
48 plus 5 is 53.
Uh-huh.
Cool. So I'm going to say, because this thing is, like, going away from you and, like, back, it's like, I don't give a care in the world. And you have been studying this thing for a while. You know exactly, like, where to blow. You know that point, right, on the Death Star? That one... freaking turret that, like, for some reason you hit that, the whole thing blows up
as it turns and begins to go on its usual patrol route. She just nails a shot right at its, like, or what would be essentially its spine, and as you see, as this blue light just pierces through its metal carapace and just poof, explodes everything out into this, into dust, as it catches the light.
Yeah, you see, yeah, the metal filings, like, just, and it shimmers, And it's just, it's all happening. It seems like in slow motion, just because the action, the moment, right, as the pieces of it just disintegrate and are held aloft for a moment on those winds. And then they just rain down from below as this thing is completely destroyed. And there's like a rousing cheer, you know, that goes up from all your gnomish crew as your poor ship, like sputtering but still going, is hanging in midair. Rook lets out a grateful noise, even Arrow, like a sigh, if you've ever heard a horse sigh in relief. You've heard it now as this happens. And even Kit lets out like a chirp of victory as this happens here. So you seem safe for the present moment.
Tony is celebrating with the crew.
Yeah, she comes around and she gives just like stern handshakes to everyone. And then she immediately and very sharply and pointedly turns to Rook and Tony and Arrow and Kit. And it's like, and you see Gidget give a signal. And Jex immediately turns one of the cannons inward facing to shoot, to like aim at you. And she says,
"Now, we don't really get too many visitors in this part of town, so I have to ask, what are you doing here? You do have the benefit of an alicorn who are generally good, but it's awfully suspicious."
Well, I'm just as surprised to see you guys here. I'm grateful that you are. We worked like quite a good team, I must say. Love your cannons, love your ship, everything you're doing here.
All of this
is great
stuff.
Yeah, you have quite the crew here. You guys are the best.
Nice guns.
Name's Tony, by the way. Tony Silvertail. This is Arrow, and this little furry friend behind me here, his name's Kit, and
Rook is, call me Rook.
We're here, I don't know if you know Reynard, but we traded some favors and we have to do this thing. We're here for a rose. That's the gist of it. We're here for a rose, and that's all. We didn't know what we were going to find.
Gidget would have zero idea who Reynard is or what the fuck that means, so.
Oh, yeah, no fucking clue. As you start just like rambling with the speech and everything, and you see she gives this long, lingering look up and down and over each and every one of you. And, you know, she's kind of like pacing back and forth across the deck of the ship with her hands folded neatly behind her back. And then she kind of stops, turns on her toe and looks at you. And she says, "You remind me of a friend of mine."
Really?
I don't know what it is, but you just seem to be like...
She tended to get herself into a lot of trouble and mixed up with a lot of situations that she didn't really need to get mixed up in, but that's also part of why I'm here. But you all don't look like pirates, and you're capable, so welcome aboard! I'm Captain Gidget. Here we have Jex, my loyal artillerist. We have Sarabelle below deck. She works all of the mechanisms on the ship, and she looks very just kind of sadly over at Kimber and is like, "And I'm sorry, Kimber, for what happened to the rigging."
Kimber looks like she's gonna cry. Yeah, she's like holding like broken rope in her hands, like as it's slipping through her hands. She's like, "Why, my beautiful ship, my..." She's, yeah, having a hard time.
But we're here. We're a research expedition in these parts.
I see. I guess you've been studying that thing for a while. You really knew a lot about it. Like how to draw its attention, how to get it to turn away and shoot just the right spots. I mean, how long have you guys been out here?
For quite a while we've been studying at this, you know, we are here researching Titan technology in order to hopefully reclaim some of the amazing and incredible and vast amounts of knowledge that was lost with the, quite frankly, near extinction of their race. So this seems to be one of the last intact places of Titan construction, and we have not been able to get in until you all showed up and things became much more apparent in an interesting way.
Wait, near extinction? Are there Titans here?
I don't know if there are any here. Perhaps there could be someone living in the gardens. We're not sure.
What's a Titan? Rook, just sorry. Does that matter? Or
and she looks for a moment kind of lost of like, how do I begin to describe this to you layman? And eventually she settles on, well, you know how there were the gods before they forsaken us all? Well, Titans aren't.
Rook genuinely has no. She was a fae for a long time. They don't do gods. So she looks at Tony like,
Well, how mortals worship deities? Titans are the creatures that created the deities.
Okay.
They're kind of like the original creator, you know, power. But I didn't think they would factor into anything we were doing here. I'm glad we came across you guys.
So, wait, do you know where, like, the roses are, or what?
Presumably. I mean, you all came a long way for a bouquet. My goodness, you must really love them. But as she points to the large cube, I guess in there.
Well, we'll probably be, I guess, landing over there soon. Do you care to join us? It seems like we work well together. We'll watch out for each other.
Indeed, it seems beneficial to be together at this point, and, well, until it no longer is. But I do not believe there is any place big enough to dock this ship, and I, quite frankly, do not want to risk docking it over there, so we'll have to take a smaller vessel over.
You got a big horse with wings.
I suppose that will do.
I don't know, can people fly on your horse, Tony? I don't know the rules.
I don't know how many he can carry, but...
Arrow swings his head, he's like, he looks at Gidget, certainly.
Yeah, you, Captain Gidget, you're welcome to ride with us.
She tips her hat and revealing this bright pink mohawk. Very well, I will gather together my adventuring bag.
So, just a quick question, Who do you work for? Like, what is this deal? Are you like a Sarina deal or a sovereign deal? I don't know.
No, I work for an independent mortal organization called the Order of the Furies, headed by one Carr Brynhilda, the founder of the organization. It's a like a paladin order where they train people to fight in the name of goodness and loyalty and... She kind of just waves.
Rook leans over and is like, I've never heard of it. Tony, have you ever heard of this?
No, I've never heard of this. Why the hell haven't we worked with them? What is that?
Yeah. Sure, that seems good. Good job.
Thanks. Well then, I'll collect my things. Feel free to make yourselves at home. Just try not to touch anything that moves.
Now that the adrenaline has stopped, if she's starting to feel Kit's claws in her back after all
you're
this time.
Bleeding. You are for like, sure, you've got a little pinprickly.
She like tears him off.
Does kicky feet like no, don't put me down the whole time and like is arched like a cat. Foxes have a very similar features to house cats, and he is just stressed out.
Yeah, I'll suggest Kit stays on the ship while we go into the gardens.
Kit swings his head no.
Fine, just stay on top of Arrow for a little bit, and don't claw too hard.
Kit is like, gives one of those little fox smirks, and Arrow looks at him, and Kit goes, oh, like, shies away, and is like, sits very gently on top of Arrow, who is clearly the superior beast. But anyway, you all form a reluctant band, and, you know, prepare yourselves now to safely head into the Hanging Gardens. You've surpassed the first challenge and are officially at the door. Good job. It only gets harder from here.
Oh, good.
But, of course, before we go, we have to do a dream or message or something, but hell yeah, it's a dream, considering everything that's going on. So let me just flip back here, because young Aoife, we're going back to you. So this is Sage's episode to shine. Sage is playing all the characters in this episode. So bless you, Sage, for doing that.
You should have had a bunch of different hats.
I know. We gotta get you hats. So as we fade out of the scene, like in the clouds after this fight, we return to Aoife, who is sitting, you know, at the bedside of her friend, Lou. And you might have been in this process, you know, trying to send out messages, get some information, and we'll talk about that later, like what you've learned so far. But I think after a while of sitting at the bedside, there comes a time when even you have to eventually drift into sleep. And when you do, you find yourself in a familiar place. An underground place with this swirling pool, somewhere you've been before, and a familiar figure, a dragon-headed figure that you've named Felix, someone who's become very familiar in your dreams, is sitting across from you when you arrive, and in that way, dreams do. You take your seat, and you know it's your seat, right? Somehow that's, it's become yours, as he looks across at you. And he says, well, things have gotten more complicated, haven't they?
It's as if I'm only beginning to see the true tangle of this web that lies before us.
I want to help you, but I'm unsure how. Without putting the end before the beginning.
And she kind of nods, and she holds in her mind this image of a quilt that every time a sibling is born, her grandmother knits a quilt specially for them.
He seems delighted by this image, as if he can see it too.
And so she thinks of the last one that was made for her youngest sibling, and she says, I want your help. My friends and I are facing things that are too big for us to handle. But what does that cost?
There is always a cost. If I could, I would help. But I cannot go into a false dream. I cannot help your friend as I am. It is a law unspoken and unbroken by my kind. But if you are willing to pay the price, for you can go where I dare not tread.
And she crosses her arms, and she bites on her first knuckle as she takes all of us in, thinking about all of the deals that the group that she has made, that they've sworn off, that they've taken on. But eventually she settles on this feeling that she had after fighting the assassin that had come for the Serena the first and then the second time. And she remembers the moment when she was bargaining with the Duke of the Blossom Court. And she remembers those feelings and those times where she really felt power. And she felt in charge. And she felt like she could really shape things. And she looks him dead in the face. And she says, I'll do it.
It is not something to accept lightly. There are few of us, you know. We serve a master long, long gone from this world in many ways. Few understand what it is, what it reveals.
I'm sure. While my path has led me across a great many people, and I hope to continue to forge a great many number of alliances in the future, with contacts and resources. Ultimately, I feel I must go this alone.
And he lets out a sigh, it's like an old man sigh of regret as he kind of creaks and like stands up and offers you a clawed hand and says, "Then kneel, dear vassal of the sleeping court."
And Aoife dutifully kneels.
And as he like grasps your hand, you feel just something moves over you, some kind of surge, some transfer of power, something that it like shorts, like in it, all your circuits are just exploding with this magic that kind of ebbs down, and he releases you, and like you feel like yourself again, normal, but somehow more present. Everything to you feels a little bit more real as you're here in this dream space, right? It's not like that dream anymore where you can't see the fuzzy edges. You can see every frickin' detail of this, every rock, every pebble, everywhere it goes, and you have complete control, undeniable and complete control over where you are in this world. If you wanted to, you could attack this person in front of you. You could, like, bring things, like, the creative potential, you feel it within yourself. And he sort of nods. Use it to help your friend. Your connection. There are no barriers to you anymore. Safeguard your dreams and theirs. The dragon will come again, and he will ask. But not today. And the dream sort of shimmers away, and you know, and you're not sure how you know now, or what's changed, but you know that this was something that Felix, this person, ended, and this was a message that was sent to you, that, and it's like him dropping the call. And you know that somehow, like he reached out to you, and you understand it all somehow, how it works. And like you wake up, and you know exactly what you can do and what you need to do to help Lou. Because this false dream she's been put on, that was not something sent by the Sleeping Court. That is not something the Sleeping Sovereign wants to happen. And you know exactly how to end it.
And that's where we're going to end the episode for today.
Katie's going to be so mad she wasn't recording.
I'm mad. What just happened? What did
what
you
the
do?
Fuck?
Another deal? Ah!
It's just a favor. It's just trading favors. It's just the name of the campaign or some shit. Anyway. Nassim, you are going to advance as Tony to the next level of your heroic destiny because one of the conditions you have met, learning something about these creatures that you are connected to, you've learned quite a lot about Arrow and his mission and are helping him. So that's a deep commitment to that. So let's talk a little bit about what you get and flip that open here. Oh, because we have the beautiful Venture Maze campaign. Let's flip it open together. We can do it.
Oh my God, so sexy.
Right? It's so nice getting to hold this damn book. Heroic Destiny Symbiosis. So you have unlocked tier 2 features. So your benefit now is Call a Friend. So you have established enough trust with your chosen creature type that you can call on them for aid. During a long rest, you can attempt to contact them to travel to you. The way you contact them is up to you. Whatever the circumstances, at the end of the long rest, one creature or small group of creatures arrive, are physically capable of doing so, blah, blah, blah. But basically it shows up to help you. So you can now officially call Arrow for help.
Oh my God.
And he's going to show up to help you.
Incredible.
So you've established that level of trust, so you now have a celestial alicorn that will either, he will show up, or you have learned, he is basically like the lord, the leader of all the remaining alicorns in the world. So he might be able to send other alicorns too from his herd to help you.
Fuck. I'm so excited.
Yes! So much happening this episode!
Yay!
Oh my God, Aoife making deals. becoming a freaking vassal of the sleeping court. We'll talk about that and what all that means next time. But yeah, thank you everybody so much for joining us for this episode of Venture Maidens. I hope you are as stoked as I am to see the next one. But thank you so much, everybody, for joining us for this episode. For those of you who are watching, please do consider, you know, subscribing, liking. For those of you who are listening, again, you know, like, throw some stars, like, leave us a rating and review. It really, really helps just to, like, get the word out about the show. We, you know, don't pay for marketing or anything. Like, we're, you know, doing it ourselves, homegrown podcast. So, like, everything you can do to spread the word is just, it's just incredible and amazing. And for those of you who want to donate in a more fiscal way, we do have a Patreon. So Patreon is this really awesome website where you can donate monthly to creators you love, you enjoy, and then get cool stuff in exchange. So if you go to patreon.com/venturemaidens, you too can help support the show, make it happen. Even throwing us like as little as a dollar a month, like, really makes all the difference in the world. We can pay cast members, you know, we can make this show better, make sure it keeps like happening, because we put so much of our time and love into this show. It just feels really great to see you all who support us and recognize that. So thank you. Thank you. And before we go, of course, we always like to take some time to say thank you, thank you, thank you to the amazing people who donate on Patreon at the highest donor tiers. So let's go around and give a big thank you. So for our Arnie cohorts tier, I want to say a big thank you to Debbie.
Thank you, Curry.
Thank you, Muffin at the one in Drury Lane.
Thank you so much, Nissa McKedden.
And in our Ferris drinking mate tier, thank you, Nadia.
And thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much, Markalai.
Thank you, Fable.
And thank you, Tony.
Tony. Thank you, Sheepish Gnome.
Thank you, Destiny.
And thank you. Oh, thank you, Scott. Sorry, I stole your thunder. I was so excited about a new drinking mate. You say it, Sage.
And thank you, our also fellow new drinking mate, Scott.
And then, of course, thank you, big thank you to Ben, aka Flower Crown Gaming, for all you do and the way you support the show. Thank you all so much. You all kick major ass. We're going to have Katie back with us next time. I think she's going to yell at us.
We're gonna get a stern talking to her.
I think we did really well without Mother.
No, everybody did really well, but we did get to meet some Campaign 1 characters. We made some deals. We did so good. We fought a burb, the biggest burb.
Always good fights. These burbs.
Yeah, I hope she not mad too bad. It'll be good, but we'll see next time. So until next time, everybody.
Venture away,
everybody! Bye bye. Clear.
Yes.